Good morning, church. It is good to see y'all this morning, and it is indeed a beautiful, beautiful day. Really appreciated, boy, it's been a great morning time of worship. I appreciated Tommy's songs, and really appreciated Joel's devotional thought this morning, and the difficulty that must have been for him to share that really personal part of his life. So thankful to be a part of a church where we are blessed with men and women who really love the Lord and are really trying to serve Him. And I'm reminded all the time about what a blessing it is to be a part of the Forest Mill family. So we're glad that you're here. I know that many of you have been traveling, and some of you are still planning to travel. And we want you to know that wherever you go, whatever you may do this summer, that we fully expect you to watch us online and give like you're supposed to. All right. I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, people will take me seriously. No, we wish you well. Godspeed. In the ancient Arabian folktale, Aladdin is the lazy son of a poor Chinese tailor. And after his father's death, he meets this magician who tells Aladdin that he's his uncle. And the magician convinces Aladdin to go after a beautiful lamp that's in this hidden cave. And when Aladdin gets the lamp, he refuses to give it to the magician. And so the magician becomes so furious at him that he seals the cave and he leaves Aladdin inside. And in despair, Aladdin starts crying and he wrings his hands. And when he does that, he brings forth a genie from a ring. Actually, the original story was he's wearing a ring, a magic ring the magician had given him. And he's crying. He wrings his hands. And that brings forth this magic genie. And this genie is willing to grant Aladdin his every wish. And he also learns that the lamp that the magician had sent him after also produces a magic genie when it's rubbed. And so these two genies, they give him his every wish, and he eventually becomes immensely wealthy, and he marries the daughter of the Sultan, and Aladdin is able to overcome every foe he encounters with the power of the lamp. Like all wonderful children's tales, of course, there's a happy ending, and Aladdin goes on to live this long, healthy, happy life, and succeeds the Sultan to the throne, of course, becomes this mighty political power. And so this story of Aladdin was so powerful, so wonderful, so entertaining that Walt Disney eventually grabs the story, makes a hit movie. How many of you kids have seen the movie Aladdin? Just raise your hand. How many of you adults have also seen the movie Aladdin? Yeah, because we watch it about 100 times, right? So I really enjoyed the movie. I think it's a great movie. It's got great music. It's got a great story. But I was thinking about it this week as we were preparing for this lesson. And I was reading Matthew 6. I thought, what would you say, what would happen if God showed up and told you, I want to grant you 3 wishes and you can have whatever you want? What would you wish for? What would you desire if you could have anything you wanted? God said, I'm going to give you 3 wishes. What do you want? At first, it seems like, well, this is a dream come true. I mean, wow, we just wishes coming true. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Because there is cost benefit with every wish, right? It's kind of a scary thought. I mean, we all talk about, you know, getting what we want, but if we were really given the opportunity to have these dreams come true, what would we wish for? What would you ask God for? Now, I didn't take a survey of the United States population or anything like that, but I think we could probably come up with a pretty fair list of what people in our country might ask for. We'd probably ask for a lot more money, right? A lot more money. Probably a happy, healthy marriage or relationship. If we have kids, we'd want well-adjusted, healthy kids. We might want good health, right? Especially those who have gone through any health struggles. Make that one of our wishes. The alleviation of all of our troubles. So, you know, no more taxes or no more bug bites or I don't know what it is that troubles you, but the absence of pain, that would be pretty nice. Or a long life or endless happiness. I mean, our lists would probably in our culture look something like that. But what about you and me? Right? We're supposed to be countercultural. We're Christians, right? We're not the culture. So what would our list look like? Because I tend to think we might sort of ask for the same things. So often we can get so focused on what we want, and we can convince ourselves that if we get what we want, all our troubles will be gone. That's the mantra, at least I tell myself. If I get what I want, all my troubles will be gone. I mean, it's really easy. Yeah, the tattoo I got on the back of my shoulders. No, I don't have a tattoo that says that. But if I did, it wouldn't be shocking, right? If I get what I want, all my troubles will be gone. The scripture asserts that this is patently false. There's no truth to that at all. And yet, I cannot seem to find freedom from my desires, because that is exactly what my desires tell me, that if I get what I want, all my troubles will be gone, that these wishes, these dreams that I have, that's going to fix everything, that's going to solve everything. And we began talking a couple of weeks ago about the two main obstacles or roadblocks or hurdles that will block us or hinder us from a life of that is interactive with God, a healthy growth in the kingdom. And the first one we talked about, we already discussed, was the desire to have the approval of others. We talked about that even some last week, how we want to put on the show, especially to be seen as godly or holy or good or righteous, devout person, right? But when we want to put on that show to be seen that way, that actually hinders a real life with God. We talked about how God, when he says, look, you want the approval of others, you can have the approval of others, but that's an interaction between you and them, not you and me. And so God just backs off and says, okay, you want their approval, you can have their approval. And it becomes a barrier to real life with God. The second one, the one we're going to get into this week and talk about today, is the desire to secure ourselves, especially by means of material wealth. Like the desire to protect, to shelter, to watch out for ourselves, especially by means of material wealth. And Jesus confronts this tendency. It's a basic human tendency. It's not an American tendency. It's not I'm Generation X. It's not a Generation X tendency or a male tendency. It's all of us, all people, all times. It's a human tendency that we have. And Jesus confronts it head on in his Sermon on the Mount when he says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. And I love this passage. You're probably really familiar with it. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, these are probably familiar verses to you. I'll bet you've heard them. You've probably read them, certainly heard sermons about them at some point or not. But when we read these verses, at least for me, as many times as I have heard and read and even studied and preached on these verses, every time I read them, whether we are kids or whether you're adults, it is impossible to read through these without zeroing in on this most important word, treasures. Right? That's a great word. We see the word treasures and I revert to like a 7-year-old boy. I am seeing pirate chests that are overflowing and dragon hordes and magic caves like Aladdin's. And I envision Scrooge McDuck swimming in a pile of gold coins and just like a sack full of jewels that are tumbling out because they become overly full. When I see treasures, that's where my mind goes. Am I just me? I'm the only greedy one. Great. And so when Jesus talks about treasures, though, he does not say money. I mean, it's not the same thing. In my mind, that's immediately what I go to is, you know, valuable stuff. But Jesus uses this word treasures a little differently because not everybody, most of us, in fact, don't have stashes of cash or piles of loot. But we all, every one of us, have things that we treasure. Our treasure could be a house or a car or a piece of technology, or it could be our clothing, our wardrobes, right? Or even a position, a job that we just really value. In general, we might say that treasures are things that we try to keep because we place a value upon them. That's what a treasure is. We place the value, not that they are inherently valuable, but that we place the value on. So we make great plans to protect and keep hold of these things. That's why we're said to treasure them, right? So we might even have a special box in our house that we keep these valuables in. And what do we call that box that we keep our valuables in? You have treasure chests? I am impressed. I was thinking safe, like we have a safe. But if you have treasure chests, I'm even more impressed because I want to come to your house, right? But we have these boxes that we put like our most valuable, whether it's papers or firearms or monetary value things, stick them in there and we call it a safe. It's a really interesting word. Because when those things that we value most are put in there, that's how we feel, safe. And maybe start thinking about Fort Knox and the U.S. bullion depository that's up in Kentucky in Fort Knox, built right beside Fort Knox in Kentucky. And even now, they still have over half of the bullion that the U.S. government keeps in store. It's about $290 billion worth of gold, which I really cannot fathom being in a location, but a little over half of the gold that the U.S. Treasury keeps on deposit is stored there at Fort Knox. And the whole week while I was thinking about this lesson, and Tommy wouldn't lead it for me, was I had the Larry Gatlin song in my head, All the Gold in California. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Tommy, could you lead us? Okay, don't have to do it right now. It's a great song. It's super catchy that everyone who's younger than me thinks I'm probably crazy for bringing up because you have no idea what I'm talking about. But I just pictured this like some place where you could put everything and like nobody else can get it right. I mean, that's what we want. But really, I don't even have a safe in my house. I don't even have a safe, but I still have treasure. We all have something. It may be the top drawer of a dresser, or it could be the cupboard in the kitchen, but we have some place that we keep our most valuable stuff. It's an essential part of what it means to be human. It's like it starts when we're little kids and we find a really cool-looking rock and a four-leaf clover and an old coin and we throw them in an old cigar box and we just hang on to those things, right? We know from the very beginning that these treasures are private. Like you store them away. You keep them kind of secret. They are directly connected with our spirit, our will, and really our dignity as people. That's why we hang on to them tightly. People who have been held in concentration camps and people who go homeless for great lengths of time, they will even risk their lives to hang on to these special possessions. Things that would be ridiculous to anybody else have taken on a great value to them. We reveal what our treasures are by what we protect, what we hang on to, what we secure, what we keep. And oddly enough, they're often worthless to everybody else. One of my most valuable possessions to me, one of the things that I value the most, you could come through my house and go through the whole thing and you wouldn't guess it in a million years. Right? It's just something that I think is really neat and I've held on to for all these years. It is like my little thing. I don't even know if it has a value, much less what its value would be to anybody else. So when Jesus exhorts us not to lay up treasures for ourselves on earth, he uses an interesting Greek word. The word lay up, or store up, it comes from this Greek word, thesaurizo. And then he was, don't lay up treasures, right? And the word treasures comes from a different version of the same Greek word, thesauros. Same thesaurizo, don't thesaurizo, thesauros. And it's the where we, of course, get the English word thesaurus, right? Which we use all the time. But a thesaurus, you know what it is? It's a treasury of words. It's like when we store up all the words, a thesaurus. And so literally, if we were to translate this into English, it would be like, don't treasure our treasures. Don't treasure our treasures here on earth. Why not? Well, Jesus is saying that these earthly treasures, this earthly wealth is really, really at risk. It is unsafe. It would be like if I was giving you the advice, don't put all of your money into junk bonds, right? If you've worked for years for this money, do not put it in something that's such a risky investment. And Jesus is saying, really, all material wealth, it's all really, really insecure. It either decays over time or it disappears altogether. In Jesus' day, you had wealth in three areas. If you were rich, these were the three things that you had. Number one, it was exhibited in the amount of clothing that you had. Poor people, you have the clothes, right, that you are wearing. That's it. But wealthy people consider their clothing as a part of their treasure because you have this fine clothing. It would be made out of wool and sewn together with golden thread. And that made it particularly vulnerable to moths. So if you were rich, moths were a big danger because part of your wealth was in the woolen clothing you had. The second thing that would show up if you were really wealthy is you had a lot of food, right? If you're wealthy, you've got food stored up. But you don't have deep freezers like my grandma, and you don't have access to vacuum packing in plastic, which will keep food forever, or hermetically sealed cans that you can store for 50 years or more, right? I mean, you don't have that. So what was a real danger if you were wealthy and you had a lot of food? You get mice, you get rats, you get worms, you get insects. And they'll come in and they'll just wreck your wealth that is stored up in food. And finally, the last thing, if you were really wealthy, was the amount of money you had, or the gold that you had accumulated. But like 99% of the homes people lived in are made out of mud and clay. So if I want to break into your house, it is not a difficult process. I can literally use some water and a stick and break into your house. I can bust through your walls with a hammer, right? It was easy for a thief to dig through or dig under or dig around or break into the walls, and they could steal anything of value you had. And so most people, they didn't have safes. So what you would do, you would get your valuables as far away from the walls as possible. You would put your most valuable things in the center of the house. And if you were particularly precautious, you would bury it under the floor in the middle of the middle room. That's where your treasures go, buried under the floor. Because your gold was so vulnerable to thieves. So you often hear people saying things like, you know, they don't make them like they used to, right? But the truth is, they never did. It was never safe. It was never going to last forever. I'm sure the cars built in the 1950s may last better than the ones built in the 2020s. I don't really know, but I know neither one of them are going to last. Sure, the clothing that was made in your childhood, the 1960s or 70s, it may have been better fabric or better stitching, or, you know, it may hang around for a couple of generations, but, I mean, it's all going to be rags at some point. Things just don't last. They never have, and they never will. Look at the seven wonders of the world. These man-made things that were supposed to they just astounded everyone. And that these are the things that are going to impress mankind and humanity for all of eternity. Out of the seven wonders of the world, only one of those is still standing. And it's in really dilapidated condition. Because no matter how much work and time and effort and precautions we take, our things just don't last. Remember the story of Lot and his uncle. He and his uncle Abraham, they began to accumulate a lot of wealth, and one day their herdsmen got into a scuffle with each other over grazing land and watering troughs, and Abraham suggested that they split up, and so Lot chose the well-watered plains of Sodom and Gomorrah. And his mistake was that he said, "Well, that's a good place to raise cattle," but he never thought about whether it was a good place to raise a family. The assumption was, if I get the cattle, my family will be taken care of. If I have a better grazing land, my family will be all the better. How many people get a job or a promotion or an this opportunity to work, and we just like jump? I think we're making a lot more money. We just jump at it without ever considering or thinking about some of the ramifications of that. Whether it's going to be, there going to be a healthy spiritual life there? A community to serve with us and alongside us? And people just don't make those assessments. So Lot moved to Sodom. Lot was already pretty wealthy. He moved to Sodom, a wealthy, almost like a prince in their world. But he leaves Sodom, a wealthy land. He leaves Sodom with nothing. Nothing. He leaves a pauper. Everything that he had worked for, everything that he had before he moved there, everything that he worked while he was there, he leaves there with nothing. It was all just gone. So all of those years and years and years that he had spent working and saving and putting stocking away, all that time was just wasted. So that's what happens when you treasure things that don't last. Think about the people, when our stock market crashed back in the 20s or took a serious recession dive at different periods in our history, people become so distraught that they're jumping out of office windows, and it was like their whole lives were destroyed when that wealth was destroyed. Suddenly it's just all gone. The thing is, earthly treasures don't last, and they don't satisfy either. No one who is preoccupied with money ever feels like they have enough. It's like that treadmill. You can get on it, and that treadmill just never gets tired of you. You can just go and go and go. It is an endless cycle. So Jesus says, instead of spending our lives valuing and holding on to and treasuring things that don't last, things that don't satisfy, Jesus presents us with an alternative, with a lasting, satisfying alternative. And he compares it to heavenly wealth or heavenly treasures. And he says, invest your life in things that will last, things that God is doing, which cannot be, so he's like, you know what's forever, really forever, if you want something that's going to last, invest in God. Your love with God, and you love God with all of your heart and soul and mind and strength, as the Old Testament put it, and Jesus rephrased it. It means to treasure Him and hang on to Him, to hold Him dear, and to protect and aid Him in His purposes. Our only wisdom and safety and fulfillment and lasting security lies in God. That is it. You can drive the safest car, the nicest car in our parking lot, and be killed in a car wreck. You can have the newest, nicest, most secure home in the city and be killed in a house fire. None of those things will ever last. What will last? And the answer is God. The Bible says that every treasure except for God, and we'll narrow it down, let's be specific. Everything except for Jesus that will insist that you insist upon, all of it's going to die after you purchase it. But Jesus himself is the one treasure who died to purchase you. He was the Lord. He had the ultimate status, right? The highest status. And he also had the ultimate security. Everything that we're looking for, status and security, wealth. Jesus had it all. And he was the Son of the Father. But when he came to earth, he gave up all of that for a death on the cross. He was utterly stripped. All of his safety and security and wealth and power and status, he gave up every bit of that to come and lay down his life. He died for something that he treasured that was not wealth and security and power. Because remember, you only die for what you think is precious. Which means at some point Jesus looked at you and me, and Jesus said, if I give up all of this, but I get them, it'll be worth it. That's the cost-benefit analysis Jesus was doing. Isaiah 53 tells us by prophecy that when he saw the results of his suffering, he was satisfied, saying it was a good trade. So if we invest our lives in the eternal, of course this means God, and it means Jesus through him the Father, and the Spirit that we are given through life in him. But we also ought to devote ourselves to what God loves, right? If we are treasuring God, then we treasure what God treasures, and God treasures the Son, God treasures the Spirit, but he also treasures other people. They are among God's treasures. They are in God's image. Deuteronomy 32:9 said that the Lord's portion is his people. That's his value. That's his inheritance, is the people. 1 Peter 2:9 says that we are God's purchased possession, like prized possession, right? That means that we as humans are treasured by God. We are God's treasure. And so we treasure one another. How many of you have ever seen the TV show Antiques Roadshow? Man, y'all are nerds like me. Good. Because it's this show where these guys from PBS they travel around and they go to like different communities and people bring them their old stuff and they're like, how much is this, you know, ladle worth? And they'll say, oh, that ladle's worth nothing. It's, you got that at Target 20 years ago. Or they'll tell you, no, this actually is really more valuable than you think. And so it's one of the most popular programs on PBS. The premise is really simple. And so in his book, The Discipline of Spiritual Discernment, the author refers to a particular episode where there's a man from Tucson, Arizona. And he had this old blanket that he had inherited several years ago. And the man knew that the blanket probably didn't have a lot of value, but it was really old, and he thought it was really neat. And so he had just thrown it on the back of a rocking chair. He thought it was pretty, he thought it was neat, and it was an old blanket. So he had it on the back of a rocking chair in a bedroom, and it sort of stayed on that rocking chair until the opportunity came and Antiques Roadshow came to town. And so with this blanket hanging on a rack behind him, he carries it to this expert, and the expert looked at this blanket, and that's what he said stopped the heart of the owner. He said, this item was a Navajo chieftain's blanket. It was woven sometime in the 1840s. It's in wonderful condition. It's one of the oldest intact Navajo weaves to survive to the 21st century, and it's certainly one of only a tiny handful of these to exist outside of a museum collection. Because of its rarity and because of its significance, the appraiser had no trouble assigning a value of somewhere between $350,000 and $500,000 for a blanket this guy had on the back of a chair. So as the man walked out of the convention center, this blanket he'd sort of slung over his shoulder and carried with him, it was now like carefully cradled in his arms, right? He treated that blanket really differently coming out than he did going in. He walked out of that building with security guards on either side of him. He drove it straight to a bank, and he deposited it in a large safety deposit box. What had been just an old blanket or junk thrown on the back of a rocking chair had instantly been transformed into a precious treasure. When you and I embrace the kingdom of God and live fully in God's presence, God opens our eyes to appreciate and love the things that are really valuable. And your life with the church community right now may just be another, just like a well-worn shirt you throw on from time to time. It's really nice and really comfortable, and I really enjoy it. But when your eyes are opened into the kingdom of God and you see people the way God sees people, they become precious and valuable. And those things that we often disregard suddenly take on new value. And the things that we were holding as valuable, we realize, oh, wow, this is just something that my grandma got at a yard sale that was totally worthless then. And it's totally worthless now. We begin treasuring the things that are real. It just takes a kingdom heart to see it. So this week, you're going to have a little exercise, a little bit of homework. I just want you to write down a list of 3, 4, 5 things that you treasure. I want you to write down what you treasure and how it can be lost. What is most valuable to you and how it can be taken away. And then I want you to rethink your list and think of long-term security. What could you hold on to that could not ever be lost? Because that's the kind of mindset Jesus calls us to here in his Sermon on the Mount. If you have been treasuring and hanging on to the wrong things, but you're ready to transition and begin hanging on to a life with God, to value your relationship with him, to value your relationship with the Son, to value your possession of the Spirit and life in the Spirit. If you're ready to begin loving and treasuring people, God's very treasures. If you need prayers for forgiveness or strength or encouragement to walk with you side by side in this journey, we want to do that with you this morning. If we can do any of that, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?